On this episode of Skeptico, Alex and Robert Perry talk with Dr. Kirby Surprise about synchronicity.
Is there a reality to the synchronistic event beyond my personal internal psychodrama interpretation of it? And so I'd ask that question to you, Dr. Surprise.
Yes, synchronistic events are objectively real. Absolutely, 100% real. But they're a mirror. So when I say that what you're seeing is subjective, I'm not saying that these are parlor tricks the brain does on you. I'm saying that both your psychodynamic projections and the mirroring effect are real, and they're external. They are actually out there, and you are actually changing the environment that you're in by 3 to 6%. Now, the easiest way to prove that people are the source of synchronistic events, rather than, you know, another supernatural source, is very simple. You create them yourself. Everybody does this all the time. This is not a specialty skill.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, we're going to return to the topic of synchronicity and that strange feeling we can sometimes get that the universe is conforming to our thoughts and desires. Our guest is Dr. Kirby Surprise, and yes, that's his real family name. And as you'll hear in the interview, I also included Robert Perry in this interview, since he is a former guest who's written a very interesting book on a more paranormal interpretation of synchronicity. So it's an interesting dialogue. Before we get there, though, I wanted to alert you to some links that I'm putting up on the Skeptico website. Links to other material that listeners have submitted that I think is fantastic. And this is stuff that we might not necessarily be able to get to in terms of a full show, but I wanted to alert people to it and have you take a look. So I think the first link I have up there is an article written by a very interesting gentleman named Bill Pillow, author of a number of books, and someone who has a very interesting take on what's going on with consciousness beyond death. So be sure to check that out. And be sure to look for other links that I post up there when I post a new episode of Skeptico. I think you'll find them very interesting. But for now, let's move on to my interview with Dr. Kirby Surprise. Today, we welcome psychologist and author Dr. Kirby Surprise to Skeptico. Dr. Surprise has written Synchronicity, The Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Brain. Welcome to Skeptico, Kirby. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Also joining me for this interview is former guest and author of the book on synchronicity titled Signs, Robert Perry. Welcome, Robert, and thanks for hopping in on this interview.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So this is a little bit of a departure from our usual format here, but I thought it might be interesting to have Robert here along riding shotgun, since we're talking about this topic of synchronicity, which is really kind of on the fringes of science, but something that Robert has written about and really has come to a completely different conclusion than Dr. Surprise. So I thought, in the spirit of kind of hashing things out like we like to do here on Skeptico, we could have you both on. Of course, we're going to focus mainly on your book, Kirby, since we haven't had you on before, and we really want to find out what you're up to. But that's what we're doing. Let me jump right into it with a quote from your book, Synchronicity, Dr. Surprise. Here it is. The experience of meaningful coincidence is universal. They are reported by people in every culture, every belief system, and every time period. Synchronicity examines the evidence for human influence on the meaningfulness of events and the way the modern computational model of the mind predicts how we create meaning. Wow, you've really bitten off quite a lot there. More than just kind of some little nook and cranny of neuroscience or consciousness. You've really kind of bitten off quite a bit. Tell us why you think synchronicity gives us these kind of insights into mind and how our brain works.
Well, evolutionary psychology tells us that the human niche is pattern matching. We developed our brains to be able to remember sets of sensory data, then look in the environment and try to find the patterns that best help us survive. Synchronicity is a very complex phenomenon, and I'd like to start out by saying I'm not necessarily at odds with Mr. Perry's work. There are different aspects and sort of levels to synchronicity. I try to take a scientific approach that looks at the evidence for, you know, human influence and human patterning. So, and what I found is that the empirical evidence clearly shows that we have some influence over this. Part of it is the way our brains match patterns in the environment. We tend to complete incomplete patterns, and we tend to filter out things that are not important to us. So to some degree, synchronicity is a result of selective attention and filling in patterns, something our unconscious processes do normally. The empirical evidence also indicates that we actually do influence the environment by 5 or 6%. This goes all the way back to the works of J.B. Ryan. These experiments have been redone for 80 years. His experiments were done with simple things like coin tosses or dice. And what I'm saying is that we actually tend to project our entire full psychodynamic range, personal, unconscious, and transpersonal, out into the environment. One of the confounding things about synchronicity is that this is a mirroring effect. We are seeing parts of our own internal processes mirrored back to us in the environment as these meaningful events. Because of this, anything you actually believe or assume about synchronicity will get mirrored back to you. It sends back exactly what you put out. My own work is I assess, diagnose, and design treatment plans for delusional and psychotic people who have lots and lots of synchronistic events, often based on religious delusions. And I'm not saying that, you know, all religions are delusional, but synchronicity runs the inherent danger of people looking into this mirror, seeing what they're thinking reflected back at them from the environment, and then assuming it's true simply because that's what they were thinking. So what I've written is a neuropsychological explanation of how the brain works and makes patterns, and then a rather elegant little explanatory fiction that uses string theory and other areas of science to make a guess, best guess, a reasonable logical guess about how it actually is possible that we have some influence over the environment.
Robert, would you like to jump in there with a question?
Yeah, sure. I noticed, Dr. Surprise, that when you were first trying to figure this whole thing out, you actually did something like asking synchronicity how it worked. Is that right?
That's exactly right. I had seen some events that I could not consciously figure out. I knew there was a connection to the unconscious, so assuming that I was talking to some aspect of the unconscious, I asked the phenomena how it works.
And does that sort of asking for answers still fit your model, or is that something you outgrew over the course of your discovery?
No, I very much believe that the unconscious is extremely intelligent and very responsive, and that, you know, we communicate with deeper parts of ourselves all the time. You know, I'm not opposed to the spiritual perspective. My own belief, you know, which is my own particular prejudice, is that states of separateness are an illusion anyway. So that, you know, anything we get sort of from the unconscious, we can't actually pinpoint, you know, exactly where it's coming from. But I take sort of the Buddhist perspective that individuality is probably an illusion of brain function anyway, and that these different levels of separation of consciousness are probably just man-made.
You know, the issue that I kept confronting when I ran into your work and started delving into it was you seem to be straddling the fence here in a way that is admirable on one hand and impossible on the other, and that's that how can we really use the current model of neuroscience that suggests that we are this biological robot and nothing more than brain that's generating this mind and this consciousness? How can we really bridge that gap as elegantly as you would like to do with your 5% into what lies beyond that, which is that consciousness is somehow fundamental to our experience, our usness, our unique feeling that we have about who we are. Can we really straddle that gap in the way that you're suggesting?
The problem is, you know, people want to be certain about things. You know, we have this tendency to be more comfortable when we have a simple, basic explanation for something that doesn't require further thought. I believe that, you know, is not the fundamental condition of being human. I think that we're always uncertain. I think there are always taking our best guess about what things mean and how things work. So what I try to do in the book is not so much straddle a fence, but make clear delineations between what science currently understands and then what, you know, a best guess model is, an explanatory fiction. So the neuropsychology in the book is actually very empirically based. The model that connects the sort of what you're saying, the sort of linear, anal compulsive, in my opinion, model of us as only physical creatures, you know, that's clearly set out. And then I do state where we basically, you know, the train leaves the station of reality and we come up with the best story we can. Now, as a scientist, one of the things I love about science is that it doesn't tell you what's true. What it does is give you a reasonable way to judge what the odds are that something is true. And what I'm saying is, according to our best understanding of neuropsychology and string theory and a few theories in science that may or may not ultimately turn out to be entirely correct, there is a reasonable explanation. But beyond that, theories and models are useful if they can predict a phenomenon. If you can use them to look out into the world and actually demonstrate some aspect of them in reality. Many philosophies are difficult because, you know, you cannot provide any proof. You cannot subject them to experiment. The assumption that people can influence events in the environment is extremely testable. In fact, it's one of the primary problems in doing experimental design. You know, we know and have known for over 100 years that observing any experiment changes the outcome. And, you know, what I'm saying is we have a best guess about why this is possible now.
Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I'd like to just understand a bit more about your model. I feel like we've you know, we're in the deep end already, but I'd like to understand just the basic outlines. Let me just see if I have it more or less correct. We're constantly seeking patterns in the environment based on our expectations and wishes, right? And that generates most of what we see as synchronicity. Is that right?
Well, you know, again, it's forming an artificial separation. There's two aspects of it. And, you know, there's an old metaphysical saying, as above, so below. And I very much see that the metaphysical part of the book is a reflection sort of the more basic scientific part. Yet we do know that, you know, through decades of research that, yes, we see what we look for in the environment. Would you mind if I describe a situation that we're all in right now for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I look at human beings as rather miraculous. Everybody that's listening to this podcast right now, the environment you're looking at around you is a hallucination. You have no direct contact with the outside world. So here's what's happening. You have in your head the universe's largest, most powerful supercomputer. The brain is a computer. It's a biological computer, and it's the best we've ever imagined. You have billions of sensory neurons pointed out into the environment. Each one of them is a digital computer. It's transmitting on and off signals to the brain. The brain takes these trillions of bits of information and it does some miraculous things to them. It deletes almost everything immediately if it has no emotional context for you, a thing we call emotional valence. Then it fills in the gaps and reassembles it with best guesses about what it believes you're looking for, what patterns you're trying to match, based on what you've been consciously choosing to think about and look for in the environment. Now, the part you think of as you is about the size of a walnut on the very front tip of the brain, the frontal lobe. You have no direct contact with the outside world. What you're experiencing is essentially a holographic image held in memory, generated by this computer in your brain. This allows you to, you know, delete things in the environment that are unnecessary, that you're not looking for, and complete patterns that are sort of camouflaged. What you're experiencing right now is a neurological hallucination, and it's not by any means a direct report of what your senses are putting out. You change things according to what the automated systems in the brain think you're looking for. This includes emotional patterns and belief system patterns as well. The reason why there are so many different religious and political views is not because people are mistaken, delusional, or insincere. It's because when they look out into the world, they see the patterns of the belief systems that they've been thinking about. Those systems, those patterns get highlighted. That's responsible for some of synchronistic events. Another large portion is we actually do change random chance around us by 5 or 6%.
But Kirby, hold on, because this is the point that I really want to kind of highlight here, because you've just said a bunch of stuff that all the neuroscientists in the room are cheering and saying, yeah. But then you're very smoothly transitioning into parapsychology work and J.B. Ryan and other psi-related work that isn't at all accepted by those same people who are in the neuroscience camp. And I'd really like to pinpoint that and have you hone in on it and tell us how you can bridge that gap, because certainly I don't think those two worldviews are compatible, because they get us to a point where we cannot explain all those processes that you just did in the same way that we did before, because we have to add in this other factor. You're saying 5 or 6%, we can talk about that in a minute, but there is this other component that I'd really like to hear your thoughts on how you're integrating that in a way that is compatible with neuroscience community as it exists today.
Sure. All right. First of all, in the book, I clearly delineate when I go into the metaphysics that I'm doing an explanatory fiction.
Why though? Why do we have to delineate the work of J.B. Ryan? Why do we have to cut that out aside and say that it's fiction?
Well, I think you're putting J.B. Ryan on the wrong side of the divide. His experiments were pretty good, actually. And, you know, he did demonstrate clearly that we're influencing the randomness of events. What he didn't have was a theoretical explanation on how that's possible. And unfortunately, the state of the science and the state of the theory isn't good enough for me as someone who is a scientist to say that, you know, it's a done deal. I can say that we can match some of the things that our ancestors believed, and that you can teach people to generate the events very clearly and very easily in the environment. So what I was saying about models having predictive value, although, you know, I'm very reticent to say that this is the absolute model, it is useful. You know, you can use this model to generate patterns of your own choice in the environment. So that implies that at least some aspects of the explanatory fiction that extend beyond what is experimentally verifiable have some validity. I also very clearly in the book want people to get the impression that synchronistic events are based on meaning. You know, the universe is inherently meaningless. It's just a bunch of energy systems. Meaning is something that human beings give it, you know, something that's relevant to you, to the observer. And I think that anyone who dabbles in synchronistic events, particularly anyone who chooses to have a relationship with them, whether or not they believe they're mirrored or aspects of the divine, it's their relationship with the events, not my relationship with the events. And what I'm trying to do is set a model out that shows people they have some influence over these events, that a lot of the patterns they see are generated by their own thoughts and their own beliefs, and then leave it up to them to decide what's true and what's valid. You know, I think that it's a disservice to limit the possibilities of someone's experience by saying, oh, well, you know, my particular scientific perspective said that's not possible. one of the problems with synchronistic events is, you know, people cut out these pieces of territory and they say that, you know, my assumptions on how it works have to be the right thing. But, you know, explanations, religious systems, philosophies are only as useful as they are to the individual. You know, they're not necessarily even wrong. They help people cope. They get people through their lives.
Sure, but when we talk about science, we talk about trying to nudge a little bit closer to that consensus reality that we share. And we can, of course, jump over to the other side, as you do, and say that we can never figure out any of this because it's all an illusion that we're creating, or we're creating our reality in some way that makes it unintelligible from a scientific measurable standpoint. But that's not what we're talking about. You're saying science, science, science. But the contradiction is, then you're saying, but you're controlling your reality and drawing into your reality this 5% factor. I don't think those two match up well. And I think we can say that you want to leave open the possibility that this might be true. But aren't you at the same time trying to nail down what we do, quote unquote, know from neuroscience? I guess I keep hammering on the same point, but I'm not totally clear on that divide there.
Oh, well, the divide is that we can say things like Rhine's work, you know, is empirically verifiable. It's been reproduced for decades. We also know from the basics of experimental design that we influence anything we observe. That's been a confounding principle for anyone who's studied experimental design from the beginning.
And mainstream science, materialism, does not at all accept that as being true, right?
No, actually, that's not true. The best designs are called double-blind experiments. They're experiments in which neither the subject or the hands-on person carrying out the experiment know what the researcher is looking for. The reason we do this is because we know that you will change the outcome based on what you're looking for, just by the act of observation. We also, in science, have another very confounding principle called regression to the mean, where, you know, when you run an experiment, you tend to get really significant results at first. But when you reproduce the experiment over and over again, the differences you're getting drop back closer to average the more times you do it. It looks very much, and this is, you know, well known in the experimental community, like your attention, the number of you do things, you know, affects the outcome in the world in general. Now, the book offers an explanatory fiction on how this is possible. It's not a verified model. There are places where, you know, it's just fun to experiment with ideas. So the book says clearly which parts of the model are actual neuroscience, you know, how Rhine's experiments work, what he found. And then it comes up with a story that uses the metaphysics and philosophy of our ancestors, you know, to try to give, and string theory in a playful way, to try to give a working explanation, not a proof of how it works, just a possible explanation. The value of that possible explanation, though, is it gives the reader the ability to create synchronistic events by choice, any pattern, you know, they want. And at that part clearly sort of meshes with the neuropsychology that says that we are looking at the patterns we choose to see in the environment. I'm not saying that the metaphysical part has to be validated. I'm saying it's an interesting story, and it gives people an excuse to actually create their own events if they want to. From that point, they choose their own relationship with synchronicity. You know, it's not for me to say what someone's belief system is or how they use it as a tool. It's a mirror. How people play with the mirror is completely up to them.
Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm with you on the neuroscientific end of things. I do think that there's an incredible amount of subjective pattern seeking going on as we interpret our environment. But I think where I part company is that I'd like to figure out what the patterns are that are just me connecting dots that aren't really connected. And I'd like to sort of chuck those ones away. So most, you know, garden variety synchronicities, I tend to discount and pay no attention to. And I'd like to find a way to identify the patterns out there that really are out there. you know, it's like if you're a doctor, you want to know what groups of symptoms really are connected as one malady. So what puzzles me is why I would hang on to the ones where I'm just seeing a pattern because I'm looking for it. Why would I value those rather than discard them?
Well, for one thing, we're always interpreting everything according to our past experience. So the old adage, know thyself, you know, you're looking at pattern. Let's take the purely subjective stuff first. The patterns you're looking at and experiencing are generated by the psychodynamic processes in the unconscious, the personal stuff. People do dream analysis, you know, they do dream work, they do all kinds of interpersonal exploratory stuff to know themselves and their unconscious and get into a better working relationship with it. Essentially, when people are working with most synchronistic events, you're dealing with something that has the same validity as working with dream analysis. You're looking at the data processing of the unconscious and you're forming a relationship with it, learning about yourself. The unconscious gives people all kinds of information about their environment and about their lives. So it's self-knowledge in a lot of ways. It also gives you the opportunity to get over a lot of self-deceptions as well. So, for instance, you know, if someone is experiencing, you know, their belief system along with their regular thoughts projected out into the environment, that's often very self-deceptive. As far as, you know, pulling out the larger global patterns, you know, that sort of assumes that there's a single linear reality out there that has to have a definite causal source. You know, I think that, you know, the explanation I've given for being able to produce synchronistic events based on the theories and string theory at the moment demonstrates that that's not actually the case, that we're living in, you know, a massive amount of multiple probabilities and we're navigating in them. So the problem with synchronicity is people have assumed that there's some kind of cosmic cause necessary to coordinate events. What I'm saying is that there's no difference in quality between being able to influence a dice roll and being able to play with solar flares. You know, there's a mistake that we make thinking that this phenomenon, that there are different levels or gradations to it. We're seeing meanings that we create, and it doesn't matter on any scale that you look. I mean, you can find personal synchronistic events in the tiniest of events or in the most cosmic of events, but it's still a mirror. You're still doing it yourself, choosing where you are in the pattern.
Robert, did you have a follow-up to that, or can I jump in there?
What I want to do in my life is basically have good reality testing. You know, you catch yourself at times where you're trying to figure a person out and you connect some little thing they said with something they did over here and something over there. And you can create this whole false picture of where they're coming from. And I want to get rid of those sort of false patterns and try to connect up the real patterns. And so my basic question is there anything about synchronicity that truly is beyond chance, that truly is patterned, you know, not just by randomness, not just by our own subjective pattern seeking? And if there is something like that, I want to understand it. If there isn't something like that, I think I'd like to just dump the whole topic.
Let me add on to that, because even if not dump the whole topic, to me, I think you've put your finger on what is, for me, the question is there a reality to the synchronistic event beyond my personal internal psychodrama interpretation of it? And so I'd ask that question to you, Dr. Surprise. Do you leave open the possibility that there is a reality beyond that? And I think that also bridges us into the other transformative realities of near-death experience or out-of-body experience or other transformative experiences that you're probably aware of. Is there a reality to any of those, number one? And number two, if there is there a parallel between those and the kind of synchronistic experiences you're talking about?
Okay, so yes, synchronistic events are objectively real. Absolutely, 100% real. But they're a mirror. So when I say that what you're seeing is subjective, I'm not saying that these are parlor tricks the brain does on you. I'm saying that both your psychodynamic projections and the mirroring effect are real, and they're external. They are actually out there, and you are actually changing the environment that you're in by 3 to 6%. Okay, both are real. Okay, these are real phenomena. Yes, absolutely. And we create them. And the book is about a reasonable explanation and explanatory fiction on how that's possible. Now, the easiest way to prove that people are the source of synchronistic events, rather than, you know, another supernatural source, is very simple. You create them yourself. Everybody does this all the time. This is not a specialty skill. Every single living human being is walking around in clouds of synchronistic events they themselves generate. Those events are changing the environment slightly to bring them the patterns they're seeking. Now, the sort of flat earth explanation to this is that we're changing the environment. The reality is we're moving through probabilities. String theory is telling us we're sitting in a virtually infinite amount of alternatives right now. I am saying that instead of people thinking that we're jumping between universes, we already span an infinite amount of these probabilities at once. We're moving through them, and we're steering through them by what we're thinking, feeling, and paying attention to. Now, that validates both of these perspectives. Now, my own best guess, the framework that I enjoy most often, is basically theosophy, which is that these are planes of consciousness, that the planes that string theory are talking about, these other dimensions, are what our ancestors have been talking about as planes of consciousness for thousands of years. They were correct. They were as smart as we are, and they were as observant as we are. These things like out of body experiences and, you know, the more paranormal stuff, I don't look at as paranormal. I look at it as extremely normal. And I think that slowly, the verifiable part of the science is gradually catching up to what our, you know, mystic, shamanic, you know, ancestors already knew, that, you know, it's all science, that, you know, metaphysics is physics. It's an extension of it. The modern part of science is that, you know, there are some things we can verify and some things we take a best guess at. The thing about synchronicity being a mirror is it's easy to verify. You know, you go out and create your own.
Now, you've mentioned that a couple times. Maybe you want to elaborate on that a little bit, Dr. Surprise, because in the book, Synchronicity, you actually guide people through some methods and some techniques where they can create these events for themselves.
Absolutely. Been doing it for 20 years. It's easy. People are doing it normally. It's not a special skill. You know, it's not something you need to go to workshops for, or, you know, even listen to me for. If you realize that you're seeing the patterns you're looking for, you look for the pattern you want to choose. And what you get back are real, objective, synchronistic events in the environment based on the patterns you've chosen to look for. It's us. We're doing it.
Anything to add, Robert?
Well, I'd like to hear more about, you know, how you see the practical utility of this. Clearly, you see practical value. Can you just tell us more about, you know, what we as listeners might do to tap into that?
Sure. Well, practical value. On the most physical level, you know, we evolved as grassland hunters in the savannas in Eastern Africa. So our brains are rigged to do one basic thing. You picture yourself as one of our ancestors. We're hunters. We're hanging out on a grassland. We're looking at hundreds of square miles of patterns of waving grass, moving in the wind, shadows produced by clouds, sunlight, everything out there we want, food, you know, avoiding danger, is camouflaged. The antelope have their own patterns. Lions have their own patterns. Our ancestors were looking at a hugely complex environment. What we learned to do was to match patterns, to undo camouflage. At the same time, we do have this 5 or 6% influence. So I believe that our ancestors were probably 5% more likely to find the antelope they wanted if they were looking for it.
But Kirby, I just got to jump in here because I've held back on this 5 to 6% thing. But where are you coming up with this 5 to 6%? It seems so random. And it also doesn't seem to fit very well with what we know about how people who do seem to be able to shape their environment do it. Even in your own accounts of some of the people that you work with, and I have to commend you, you're on the front line of trying to help people shape their lives and people who are severely mentally ill and delusional, and you're trying to help them overcome some of their delusions by applying this. So you're to be commended for that. But when they do that, can we say they're only applying 5 or 6%? Can we say across the board that it's 5 or 6%? And moreover, I think it's kind of a misreading of some of the parapsychology research of the Pear Lab or the J.B. Ryan stuff to say the effect size that they found over thousands of trials averages out to 5 or 6%. So therefore, the human influence is 5 to 6%. Can we really apply that statistic in that way?
No, not universally at all. As far as the Ryan's work goes, I've been in touch with his daughter, who's the curator of his research, and she's completely agrees. You know, my stuff I'm saying follows his research. I think that, you know, that's a 5 or 6% is maybe an overall generalized pattern. Certainly, peak experiences people have, either due to trauma, religious experiences, high states of emotionality or attention, alter that number considerably. What I'm saying, I'm trying to do with the 5 or 6% number is, again, it states it's a best guess in the book for what people are doing generally. You know, I don't believe people have the kind of influence over the environment that works like The Secret say they do. And I don't believe people are unable to affect their environment. Ryan's work is, and which has been, you know, reproduced for 80 years, seems to be, to me, the most reasonable and closest approximation of how much influence we have over random events. And I'm using his research as my best guess about what people are generally doing, you know, to that degree. I also believe that, you know, emotional valence, stages of emotion or heightened attention, increase those odds considerably. A lot of this is an explanatory fiction. You know, it's a reason that I've written in for people to look out into the environment to try to create the events themselves. As far as their practical use, you know, if what you're looking for in your life, no matter what that is going to show up 5 or 6% more of the time if you're looking for that pattern, that's fairly significant. I also think there's a lot of self-knowledge here. You know, if you recognize that the synchronistic events and the meanings that you're perceiving are parts of your own inner processes, you get to know yourself better. And beyond that, and what is for me the most important reason for all this, is it's fun. You can walk around and recreate the entire theme from Star Wars in your reality if you want to. You can pick a religious system. You can pick your favorite mythology, you know, and live it through in the environment. This is enjoyment. You know, this doesn't have to be a big, heavy-duty, serious, self-exploratory, you know, spiritual crisis. This is something we're all doing. It's actually kind of fun.
Well, it certainly is a fascinating theory, and it's more than a theory. It's a fascinating phenomenon. You've given us a new insight into it and also some tools for how to, as you say, experiment with it in our own lives. So again, the book is Synchronicity, the Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Brain. Dr. Kirby Surprise, thanks so much for joining us today. Let me say before I wrap it up, is there anything that we maybe haven't covered? For example, please, before I let you go, tell us your website and where people can learn more about not only the book, but the other videos and other information you've put out concerning this topic.
All right. There's a website called howsynchronicityworks.com, and it is part blatant commercialization for the book and part blog where people can come in and comment and leave their own events. I've got some talks that are out on YouTube, you know, if you look up my name. I'm not primarily interested in the commercial part of this. I'm just trying to let people know they have this really cool ability to create these events around them and to you know, give them a context for it that allows them to be, you know, somewhat creative and enjoy it.
Well, I think you've done a great job of explaining that and making that available to people. So we'll see what the response is. Thanks also to you, Robert, for sitting in and for adding your insights to this. Thanks to both of you.
My pleasure.
Thanks again to both Kirby and Robert for joining me today on Skeptico. There's a couple of questions from this dialogue that I'd like to queue up for the Skeptico forum. The first would be, what is going on with synchronicity? Is it just something we're creating, our own psychodrama, seeing patterns where they don't really exist? Or is there more? And of course, there's always going to be part A. We know that. We know that we're pattern seeking. That's a given. But are we pattern creating? Are we creating our reality? And the second question is the question I kept driving Dr. Surprise towards, which is, how can you really mix these different ideas of modern quote-unquote brain science, which is really built on the idea that you are nothing but your brain, you are this biological robot, how can we mix that with, as he says, J.B. Ryan or parapsychology in general? And then how are we supposed to approach the 5 to 6% figure out of, for example, the PEAR research at Princeton that suggests that we are able to control events around us? So just your thoughts on how he's constructing that argument and whether you think that's valid would be of interest to me. Of course, the place to do that is either on the forum or on the comment section of the website. The website is at skeptico.com, skeptiko.com, and you'll find all the appropriate links there, including an email, Facebook link to me, and all that good stuff. I have a number of interesting interviews coming up, an interview with Dr. Eben Alexander on his fascinating new book on near-death experience is next. Also have a debate, if you will, style interview with a very well-known, well-published atheist. I think you'll enjoy that, as well as a number of other shows I'm working on, several of them with your help. So please stay with me for all of that. And until next time, take care. Bye for now.